Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 182 for Friday, January 27th, 2012. Good evening from downtown Denver. By this time next week, Darlene and I will be halfway through our stay on St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and I'm going to be completely unplugged except for my Kindle, and I'll tell you more about that at the end of the show. But the Caribbean is a place where my guest this week has spent some time sailing and reading on a Kindle. Eric Loss is now in a different hemisphere altogether, continuing his solo circumnavigation of the globe after a stop in Chile to repair the mast of his boat. His stop in Chile gave me a chance to visit with him for tales of his first 70 days, during which time he read about 40 books on his Kindle, including an anthology of the late British humorist P.G. Wodehouse.
I can't take too much of it one chunk because stories seem to sort of follow this really similar pattern of like awkward English boy meets American girl and falls in love and gets married after trouble with the parents. But going through Moby Dick, I'd read a couple chapters of that and then read one of the P.G. Wodehouse stories and then go back to reading Moby Dick.
In news, a top Kindle executive suggests that the Kindle Owners Lending Library is boosting book sales. NBC launches an ebook publishing arm, and one of my favorite tech journalists pens one of the best Amazon think pieces I've ever read, an in-depth profile of Larry Kirschbaum, head of Amazon's Upstart New York Publishing Initiative. For tech tips, I'm going to revisit the matter of extending a highlight across pages on the Kindle, and especially the Kindle Touch. And for the Fire, I'm going to tell you about a backup battery and how to manage magazine subscriptions. In content, I'm going to sing the praises of the Kindle Daily Deal and Miss Marple in the Caribbean. First up in news, Russ Grandinetti, Amazon's Kindle Content Vice President, this week said early data suggests that the Kindle Owners Lending Library is boosting customers' purchases of books by authors making their work available in the lending library. Laura Hazard Owen of paidcontent.org has the story from this week's big Digital Book World gathering in New York City. The lending library enables members of Amazon Prime, which costs $79 a year, to borrow up to one free ebook a month. Grandinetti told his audience at Digital Book World that Amazon compared two groups of Amazon Prime members, both of which comprised customers who have owned an e-reading device for more than 6 months and made at least one book purchase in the last 30 days. One group used the Kindle Owners Lending Library and the other did not. Grandinetti reported that after the average customer's first borrowing of a book from the lending library, he or she went on to purchase 30% more books. As a specific example, he mentioned the Hunger Games trilogy by Suzanne Collins. The data show that 19% of customers who borrowed the Hunger Games from the library later purchased one of the other books in the trilogy instead of waiting another 30 days just to borrow it for free. That example hit home with me because my second free borrowing from the Kindle Owners Lending Library was The Hunger Games. I had been curious about the buzz around the series, but I honestly didn't think I was going to enjoy a story about a totalitarian regime that holds ghoulish games in which children fight to the death. But when I could try the book for free, I went ahead and read it. I found it riveting and not as gruesome as I feared, with a captivating story of young courage and ambivalent young romance. I might very well have purchased the second title, Catching Fire, instead of waiting 2 weeks for my chance to borrow it for free, but as it happened, our friend Tom and Casper's son Jeff had just finished Catching Fire, and he didn't realize that he could lend it to someone else for 2 weeks, so he was pleased to share his book with me, and I'm halfway through it, and we'll certainly read the final book of the trilogy, Mockingjay. I see that it's priced at $9.95, so I'll probably wait till I have a chance to borrow it. But if the price had been closer to $5, I might very well have been someone drawn to a purchase by the initial exposure to the series by the lending library. Grandinetti stressed to the audience, which I imagine was largely made up of representatives from the big publishers, he stressed that the data from this little experiment is very preliminary. Laura quoted him as saying, "I don't want anyone to think we're definitive on this, but this is the actual data, and we're doing our best to really map it out." I'm sure he hoped to interest the big publishers in participating in the lending library, which to this point they have declined to do. Next in news, we have another blurring of traditional boundaries among media in response to the technology of the ebook era. Writing at digitalworld.com, Jeremy Greenfield this week reported that NBC Publishing is designed to capitalize on growth in e-reader and tablet adoption and a backlog of more than 1 million hours of video content that NBC has. This makes it sound as if NBC Publishing will be aiming more at the iPad and the Fire than the e-ink Kindles, but you never know what wonders technology may bring and how soon we might have a reflective color screen for the Kindle e-reader that can also handle video. NBC Publishing plans to produce enhanced ebooks using both archival and new NBC video footage as well as print-based ebooks. This is going to be an interesting initiative to watch. One guy at NBC that I'd love to see write an ebook, enhanced or otherwise, is Pete Williams, who is NBC's justice correspondent. I met Pete when he was the news director at the NBC affiliate in Casper, Wyoming, and I was the PR guy for the local gas company. He's a Stanford graduate, one of the smartest, most professional journalists I've ever met. So it'd be fun to be reading his ebook out of this new publishing arm of NBC. And finally in news, speaking of smart journalists, I want to recommend a great profile just out at businessweek.com by Brad Stone, formerly of the New York Times. He was based in San Francisco. I suspect he's still in San Francisco writing for Business Week. By way of telling the story of Larry Kirschbaum, vice president and publisher of Amazon Publishing, Stone manages to give a vivid sense of how far Jeff Bezos and Amazon have come in revolutionizing the book publishing industry. His profile opens with a classic scene in November 1997 when Kirschbaum, who was then the powerful head of Time Warner Book Group, brought a guest to a fancy gathering of publishing luminaries at a place called Monkey Bar on 54th Street. As Stone tells it, the guest was, quote, a young online bookseller named Jeffrey P. Bezos, whose ambitions would eventually end up affecting the lives of everybody at the party. Bezos last May hired Kirschbaum to head Amazon's fledgling New York-based imprint, which is either an innocent lab for new ideas in publishing or an unstoppable competitor to the big publishing houses. I especially like how Stone can tell the story with insight from both the East and West Coasts, noting that that Amazon is the publisher's biggest retailer, at the same time that Kirschbaum's imprint will be competing with the publishers for top authors, Stone writes. On the West Coast, people cheerfully call this kind of arrangement coopetition. On the East Coast, it's usually referred to as getting stabbed in the back. By accepting the Amazon position, Kirschbaum morphed from one of the best-liked figures in New York publishing to something like a pariah, but Stone concludes the piece noting Amazon's longtime horizon for success, and which means that the company is preparing for the world when the majority of books are distributed electronically. At that point, the initial trickle of Amazon publishing authors signed up, like Tim Ferriss, may have become a torrent, including the likes of Stephen King and Grisham and who knows who else. And at that point, Stone writes, Larry Kirschbaum could once again be one of the most popular guys in New York. I haven't had this much fun reading a piece about publishing and ebooks in a long time, and I highly recommend that you download it to your Kindle with Send to Kindle and sit back for a great read. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. For the e-ink tech tip, I'm going to revisit the matter of making highlights across pages, which is something that you can't do on the Kindle Touch without a workaround, which I'm going to talk about. The non-touch Kindles enable you to start a highlight on one page and by pressing the next page button, continue it to the following page or even pages beyond that before ending the highlight. This can be very useful, but I actually don't usually highlight more than a page. So the more normal situation is that I have a sentence that I want to highlight that begins near the bottom of one page and crosses to the next. And as several of you have pointed out to me in emails, there is a workaround for this, which is to reduce the font size. And on the touch, this turns out to be kind of fun because if you make a pinching gesture with two fingers on the screen of the touch, it brings up the font size controller and drops the size down a notch. I've been playing around with this, and it seems that if I make two pinches in a row, the size automatically drops two sizes, so you can kind of control where you're going by the number of pinches that you make. And also, alternatively, if you pinch and then tap the smaller size on the controller bar quickly before the controller disappears, you can immediately choose the smallest size font. Now, with luck, you may find that your would-be highlighted passage will be all on one page with a smaller font. You can highlight it and then make the reverse gesture, a spreading of the two fingers, to return the font to the preferred size. Lately, this has seemed to be working for me about 80% of the time that I want to highlight something that crosses pages, but the rest of the time, even at the smallest font, my intended passage straddles the page. I hope Amazon comes up with a software update for the touch that will enable it to highlight across pages as well as its previous generation siblings, including the $79 Kindle, which has a physical next page button, and you can highlight across pages as before. I've got a couple of tips for the Fire. The first comes from Dave Sparks of Pasadena, California, who heard about the podcast from Bufo Calvin's blog and has been listening on his Fire via the Stitcher app, which I also use for podcasts. Dave found the following item in the Kindle discussion forums. He writes, "The Kindle Fire shipped on about November 15th. A number of magazines offer 90-day free trial subscriptions. Those initial subscriptions are going to be coming up for renewal around the second half of February. But what I and many others have found out is that many of these magazines aren't really magazines per se, they're apps. Vanity Fair, Wired, The New Yorker. If you subscribe to these, they won't show up on your newsstand tab on the Fire, and they don't show up on the Manage Your Kindle page if you go there via the website. So, how to cancel these subscriptions if you don't want to get billed? Uninstalling the app won't work because that doesn't notify the publisher. Dave's solution is simple, and it works. I've tried it. You go to apps, the apps tab on your Fire, then you go to Store. Then you drop down in the little icon at the bottom of the screen, which brings up the menu, and then you will see a My Subscriptions thing that you can tap on. And when you do that, you'll see an opportunity to turn off auto-renew for each of your magazines. That's a great tip, and I turned off auto-renew for my Vanity Fair and New Yorker free trial subscriptions on the Fire. I had planned to cancel them in time not to incur any charges, but I probably would have flailed around some to figure out how to do it. So if you likewise were planning to just benefit from some of these free 3-month subscriptions, I recommend that you make this change now, and it'll turn off auto-renew, and then you can forget about it. The second Fire tip is a recommendation of an external battery for the Fire. I bought one of these because I thought I was going to take the Fire on this long trip from Denver to St. John coming up on Saturday, but I've actually decided to leave the Fire at home and travel a little lighter to paradise just with my $79 Kindle in a handsome brown lighted case from Amazon. I'm sure I'm going to use this battery some other time, and meanwhile, I've had a chance to see that it does seem to work pretty well. The one I bought is the PowerGen Mobile Juice Pack Ultra for $39.99, and it's eligible for Prime 2-day free shipping. It weighs 4¾ ounces and is kind of roughly the size of a cigarette pack. I charged it overnight last night, and this morning when my Fire had dropped to about 15% of its battery life, I plugged it into the PowerGen battery. I was using the Fire as a countdown timer to keep myself on track with projects, and it extended the use of the Fire, I'm guessing maybe 5 hours, so I was using it and it was still charging the battery, and at the end of all this I had 80% of the battery left. So it really gave quite an extension of the battery life. So I can see how this would be great for flights longer than Denver to Boston or other situations. It comes with adapters that you can use to charge lots of other devices, including iPhones and iPads. So if you're worried about running out of power for your Fire, I think the PowerGen device is a good bet. I've got a bonus tech tip. I usually confine my tech tips to Kindle devices, but I've recently added a reading tool to my web browsing arsenal that I'm so happy with that I just want to pass it along to you. It's a free browser plugin named Clearly, introduced last month by Evernote. If you install Clearly on your Firefox or Chrome browser, a little icon that looks like a tensor lamp will appear to the right of the field where you enter web addresses or URLs. When you come across an article that you want to read carefully, you click on the Clearly icon and it makes a swipe across the web page that leaves a beautifully simple view of the main article on the page, stripped of all ads, links, and extraneous items. It's almost as good as sending an article to your Kindle via Send to Kindle, which is my favorite of the several plugins that do that. Sometimes I care enough about an article to do more than scan it at my computer, but not so much that I want to curl up with it on my Kindle, and clearly makes this middle ground of attention a real pleasure. To get it, just open Firefox or Chrome and navigate to evernote.com/clearly. That's just spelled the way it is in English, C-L-E-A-R-L-Y. You will see a green button labeled Get Clearly for Chrome or Get Clearly for Firefox, depending on which browser you're using. It's apparently not available for Safari yet. You'll have a series of steps to get the plugin added and working, and they're quite simple. And when it's done, you'll have this nice new way of reading articles on your web browser on your computer. When I last spoke with Eric Loss on October 31st, he was preparing to embark on a solo nonstop circumnavigation of the globe in his 37-foot sailboat named Odyssey. He did set sail on November 7th, headed out into the wide Pacific Ocean in a southerly direction toward Cape Horn at the tip of South America. If you've been following his blog posts at svodyssey.blogspot.com, you know he is chronicling his adventure with vivid writing about everything from weather to moods to food to what he's reading on his Kindle. He crossed the equator on November 29th, and all was looking good until December 13th, when he found a problem that resulted in a detour to the coast to Chile for repairs. Thus ended his hopes of a... There's the clock. You could think of that as the ship's clock, maybe. It's my great-grandfather's clock from Maine, chiming the 11th hour. So that ended his hopes of a non-stop circumnavigation, but the adventure continues, and I was able to catch up with Eric on January 19th for a Skype interview about the approximately 70 days he did spend at sea so far and what's ahead. We'll begin with his account of the problem that he discovered roughly 2,000 miles from land on December 13th.
Basically, I was trying to find a leak that was unrelated leak on the boat, and I opened up like the cabinet that the mast step is in, where the bottom of the mast attaches to the boat down inside, and I noticed that the mast was moving a bit, and I had been sort of nervous about the mast step, like as the mast sits on this steel plate inside the boat, and when I had the boat been doing work on the boat this summer, when the boat everything got put back together, I hadn't really gotten a chance to get in, and because the yard put the mast back in, I hadn't gotten a chance to get in and sort of like really see sort of what condition that piece of metal was in. And from sort of the edges of it, where I could see them where they stuck out in the back end, it didn't look very good. So I was worried that the motion of the mast was because that piece of steel was starting to flex, which obviously is not a good thing.
So at that point, you were concerned that if you ran into some rough weather, that you could have just lost the mast?
Lose the mast, or, I mean, the worst case scenario would be in my head at the time was that if something really went bad at the mast step, that the mast could basically punch out the bottom of the boat and leave me without a mast and with a 8-inch diameter hole in the bottom of the boat.
That would have kept me up at night, I think.
Yeah, so, and that was sort of... I wasn't really, like, I wasn't 100% sure quite what was going on, but I had sort of had this, like, in the back of my head, I'd been sort of nervous and worried about, I mean, all sorts of stuff, but that plate in particular had been one of the things that had sort of been bugging me. So my first thought was that if that was what the problem was, like, I couldn't get into rough weather with that situation, so I decided to sail to Valparaiso to try and sort things out and figure out what was going on.
And you were way out in the middle of the Pacific at that point, so you had to sail about 2,000 miles to get to Chile, right?
Yeah, which was horribly unpleasant. It was nice weather, but the latitude I was at was sort of right in the middle of the horse latitudes, and there's big high-pressure systems that sit right there, so it was a very slow 2,000 miles because there wasn't much wind.
And you wrote why they call it the horse latitudes. Why is that?
In like in the day of like big sailing ships, people would, like, the story goes that the ships would be becalmed there and then save water, they'd have to throw all their horses overboard because they were stuck for so long.
So you docked in Chile, it looks like on January 10th, after almost 70 days at sea. And what was the process like of leaving your solitude at sea and rejoining the world?
It was really weird. I mean, I've been on shore now for 9 days and I'm mostly readapted, but probably the first 3 or 4 days I was sort of wandering, and I don't know, just everywhere I went, sort of, I felt really disconnected from reality. And it was a lot. I mean, I've done ocean crossings before, but always with other people on the boat and never this long, and getting back ashore is always kind of exciting and weird, but I don't know. It was a very sort of, it was almost disconcerting. Just sort of like everything was kind of overwhelming, and I didn't really like, and also not being able to speak much Spanish was also kind of alienating, it felt like.
Yeah. Well, and reading some of your posts, the issue of solitude fascinated me. At this point, have you learned anything about just sort of the management of your mood when you're spending so much time alone?
I mean, one of the things I figured out fairly well, and I'm not very good at following it, is that like the best way I found to sort of like get myself out of at least a slump is to find some sort of boat project to work on and pour all my energy into it, whether it's, I don't know, like fixing a sail or cleaning something, just because if I'm thinking about whatever that project is, I can't focus on whatever else is going on. But the other thing I really started to sort of fall into, especially this piece coming into Chile, which was really frustrating because there wasn't much wind, and the wind there was really fickle, and it was very sort of up and down, was just to sort of almost accept it and accept the fact that when there was no wind, I was going to be sort of pissed off and grumpy, and when there was wind, I was going to be really ecstatic and just sort of roll with those punches and mellow it out a little bit, mm-hmm. but just sort of take it for what it was.
Well, now you've done quite a bit of reading on your two Kindles. How does time spent reading factor into the management of the moods and the effort to stay sane?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I could do this without books and without. I mean, the Kindles are a great way of taking reading material on board, because I mean, I've probably on this piece I probably read 40 books of various types, you know, and just taking that many in like actual hard form would just take up all the space I've got, or a lot more of the space I've got. I think that I spent a lot of time reading, especially like on the way here during the middle of the day when it's like real sunny out and I want to avoid getting sunburned and sort of camp out down below with a good book, and it helps really sort of burn through time, which is nice, because especially when there's not a whole lot going on with weather or becalmed, there's not much else to do.
And what are some of the books that you managed to read during this period?
Well, I sort of went through a whole string of things. Bain Publishing is like a sort of sci-fi house, publishing company that has a whole series of like a bunch of their books they offer free online. So I downloaded a lot of those, and it's mostly sort of trashy, but it's good sort of quick reading. I read Les Miserables, which I'd always sort of wanted to read, and I was sort of wondered why people were so excited about it, and finally got into that. The other big, heavy thing I read was Moby Dick, which was also sort of, I guess, appropriate.
What's it like to read Moby Dick when you're bobbing around in the horse latitudes?
I liked it, actually. There's parts of it, obviously, that are kind of silly and not particularly accurate in terms of, like, the whales and things, but there was a lot of sort of, I found there's a lot of truth in parts of it, and I felt that parts of like sort of how it captured the mood of being at sea, and sort of like the other thing I really noticed about the book too was that most of the whole book while they're sailing is punctuated by running into other ships, and a lot of the action takes place while they're talking to other ships, and I can very much sympathize with that, because if you're just sailing endlessly, that meeting another ship is a huge event. I mean, when I saw other ships out there, which I only saw probably at least for the last 30 days, one or two other ships, but it was always sort of a big happening, and get out the binoculars and look at them and try and talk to them on the radio and see if they spoke English, just because it breaks up the monotony of no wind or moving slowly.
And then you were reading some P.G. Wodehouse, it looks like. How did that fit into the overall reading plan?
Yeah, that's just sort of fun reading. I mean, I'm not quite sure how I got into that, but I managed to find like the, I think it's like everything that he's ever written, or on Amazon, like the essential P.G. Wodehouse, and it's just sort of, that's fun, just sort of fun light reading, and I can't take too much of it at one chunk, because they all sort of stories seem to sort of follow this really similar pattern of like awkward English boy meets American girl and falls in love and gets married after trouble with the parents. But after reading, after like it's a nice sort of like breakup, like going through Moby Dick, I'd read a couple chapters of that and then read one of the P.G. Wodehouse stories and then go back to reading Moby Dick.
40 books. So what have you loaded onto your Kindles since you had a chance to add some more stuff, I assume?
Well, I actually haven't had a whole lot just because, I mean, the internet at the Yacht Club has been sort of spotty, and tonight I'm actually going to try and get some more books. One thing I did put on there was the entire Patrick O'Brien Master and Commander series, which I've got them all in paperback and hardcover, but I didn't want to bring them along just because it takes up a lot of space, and I didn't want to wreck my real books if they took a wave or something. But I'm looking forward to reading that series again.
Yeah, that'll be fitting kind of in a way similar to the Moby Dick.
Yeah.
What does this do to your plan to get around Cape Horn by the window of the summer weather?
It doesn't mess up getting around Cape Horn that much. Sort of right now would be ideal time for rounding Cape Horn, or 10 days ago. But the summer here is still, I've still got another sort of two solid months of summer. Getting around Cape Horn, it might actually be a little bit better for me because it's got a little bit more time for the weather to mellow out. My bigger concern is then it just sort of at the other end of the trip as I start coming out of the summer, is that I'm going to be in the Southern Ocean longer into the fall than I had sort of hoped to be. One coming in towards Australia and like in the Indian Ocean and coming back into the Pacific. But for here, it should be pretty good. I'm not that worried about like just getting around Cape Horn in terms of losing the season.
How much additional time do you figure this detour has added? You're thinking you might be 7 or 8 months total.
Yeah. Well, when I decided to make the detour, it was, I think the from there to here was something like 30, just over 30 days, like 33 days or so. Somewhere in that vicinity. So, and from that location, it would have been probably a little bit less time than that just to get to Cape Horn. So that combined with spending probably 2 weeks here, and then it's going to be another probably 2 or 3 weeks from here down to Cape Horn, probably sets me back a solid month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what it is. So.
Now, in this process, when you got to land, did you ever have to deal with the possibility of just aborting and saying it's been a fascinating 70 days, but you'll sail around the world some other time?
It's the thought crossed my mind. And certainly, like, on the way in here when I wasn't really sure what was going on with the mast, I definitely thought about that a couple times. Once I got in here and sort of, like, got back into the swing of fixing things and get everything sorted out. I had probably a 12-hour period where I was sort of really thinking about it and sort of just a lot of like just worrying about everything. And it was right before I put the mast back into the boat. And then got the mast back in and everything was fine and sort of like pushed all the concerns back out of my head. So I'm feeling sort of back onto it for pushing onwards now.
Now, you had a week without your computer, and then the rice and the computer bag brought it back to life, but I assume you've taken advantage of this interlude to beef up your electronic system.
Yeah, I've actually got a whole goodie bag, suitcase full of various goodies that came down to me. I've got two new computers that I got. I got two more inverters to power the computers, both of which are much nicer than the ones I had, and a couple of new sort of running lights and various other gewgaws for trying to make my electronic life a little bit nicer.
And did you have to take in some more food? I think you had 1,700 pounds of food when you left. How much did you have to add in on this stop?
I haven't done it yet. I'm trying to get out of here. I was initially thinking this weekend, and now just I went and talked to sort of like the Yacht Club today, and sort of it's going to take me a couple days to get through clearing customs on the way out again. So I'm going to try and get out of here next week now, or early next week. So I was, the thing that surprised me most about the food, going back to that, was that I ate hardly any of my canned goods, and all the fresh provisions I had lasted really well. So I mean, I still have on the boat probably 30 pounds of sweet potatoes, which are still good, and I'm eating most of my onions, but I still have a lot of citrus fruit, so I'm gonna restock up on all the sort of, load up as much of the fresh food as I can, and I'm probably gonna try and actually get rid of some of my canned food, and I had way too many condiments and sauces. Like I don't know how many pounds of curry I have, and I've only eaten half of a jar of curry, so I'm gonna try and trim some weight there and hopefully end up leaving here a little bit lighter than I left LA.
It seemed like leaks were a pretty common theme. Were you able to do things that are going to result in a little drier proceedings going forward?
I hope so. I spent probably 3 days here pulling off every piece of hardware that had been leaking on me and rebedding it. And one of the things about problems with fiberglass boats is that just because they flex a lot and it's never going to be entirely leak-proof forever. I mean, I think this job will hopefully keep me drier for a couple of weeks or a month, and then everything will probably start opening up again and leaking, and I'll have to do it all over again. But it should be nice for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed, you frequently wrote in the first person plural that you'd say, we'd hook into a squall or this or that. And I assume that the other person in that plural was the boat.
Yeah, I've noticed that actually. And I guess it's probably the boat. The other thing that sort of passed through my mind, because most of that was unconscious, was that I almost felt a little bit uncomfortable writing first person singular. I'm not entirely sure why, but I think maybe it's just, I mean, most of my other sailing has always been with crew, so it seems kind of weird to be talking about I, but I think it is also using the boat as the second person there.
That's interesting. So that you're just sort of backing off a little from too much focus on yourself by making it plural.
Yeah.
Well, if you're including the boat in the plural, how did your relationship with the boat change over the 70 days?
Well, I certainly know Odyssey a lot better now than when I started. I've been impressed with how well the boat has handled everything so far. And it's not, I don't know, I mean, I've had some of like the bigger ships I've sailed on, I've felt sort of more of a personality from them in some sense. I don't really feel that with Odyssey yet, but at the same time, like, I definitely feel more sort of, I don't know, more of a connection with the boat.
Yeah, I imagine that's right. Now, some of the writing I thought was fabulous, you know, there, and I suspect it comes from sort of stream of consciousness out there, but one, I think on November 26th, you wrote, "Wind and sea incessantly, groaning, pounding, creaking, moaning, Odyssey struggles southward. It seems an eternity ago that the bow was actually pointed south." And so, I mean, you have to be thinking about possible literary output from this as you go. Is that still your hope that there'll be some kind of a book or maybe an ebook when you finish?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to do. It'd be kind of fun. One of the things with that too is with all this, with all the blogs, I felt this, not so much at the start, but my mother and occasional emails started been like, "Eric, you need to post more on the blog. Everybody's listening," because I think she's got the grocery store, people at the grocery store, and I don't know who else all interested in it. And I started to feel a little bit of pressure on the blog to like, sort of in terms of quality, that I've got to put something decent on. So sometimes I'll go with, like, when I feel like I don't really have any inspiration or like something really interesting to write, I'll just not write for a couple of days, where I think at the beginning of the trip I would have just posted an update, like something boring, just be like position speed for sailing along, you know.
Mm-hmm. So as your sense of an audience grew, your standards get a little higher as to what you would write.
Yeah.
Well, if you were going to do just a quick ebook based on the first 70 days, what would you give it for a title?
Oh, man. That's a horrible question. I have no idea.
Well, that must mean it's not ready to be a book yet. So you'll have plenty of time in the next 7 months or so to come up with a title.
Yeah.
Well, anything else that happened out there that maybe involving reading or the Kindles that you think my listeners might be interested to hear about?
One thing that has been nice, actually, with the Kindles, just as a side note, I'm finally getting everything sorted into collections on them.
Ah.
That made a huge difference in terms of sort of like
my ability to read things and figure out where everything was. Because just I hadn't, I mean, before this trip, I had never, didn't even really know about collections. I guess they're fairly new, but had just always been scrolling through the whole 15 pages or whatever of books, and that made a big difference in terms of my ease of life. But
yeah, categories of collections did you create?
I only have a couple. I've got one that's for sailing books. I've got one for mystery novels. I've got one for sci-fi, and then I've got a category that's sort of like classics, and then everything else sort of falls into the middle in the mush.
I've been speaking with Eric Lawson Chile as he prepares to continue his solo circumnavigation of the globe. Thanks, Eric, and bon voyage.
Thanks, Len.
In content, I'm going to remind you of how worthwhile it is to set up an email link from Amazon so that you see the Kindle Daily deal each morning in time to take advantage of it before the day is done. To do this, you go to My Account at Amazon, just log in, and then Settings, and then Amazon Local and Amazon Delivers email subscriptions. At the bottom of the Amazon Delivers list, you will see Kindle Daily Deal, and in the right column, you'll be able to check on subscribe, and then each day you'll get a notice of the daily deal. Unfortunately, this is available to U.S. customers only. I find myself clicking on this perhaps a third of the time buying the deal. Some days I have to tie myself to the mast not to look at it because I know I'm up against my Kindle budget and I just don't want to be tempted. They're usually 99 cents, $1.99, and as I was loading my Kindle for the trip to St. John, I really was delighted to find so many of these great books in my archive, just waiting for a chance to read them. Some that I'm taking are The Paris Wife, a novel by Paula MacLean, The Handmaid's Tale by the great Canadian novelist Margaret Atwood, and Confederacy of Dunces, a Pulitzer Prize winner by John Kennedy Toole. You know, it's kind of like getting a peek at a great bargain bookstore every day, and it's a way to build your archive for very reasonable costs. My example this week of the fun of having a Kindle Fire is something I won't actually use in the trip since I'm not going to be taking the Fire, but it's been good for getting me in the mood for departure on Sunday. Since I knew that I wouldn't be having Wi-Fi, I wasn't going to be able to use instant streaming, so I tapped on video on my Fire and then entered Caribbean as a search term. High on the list of items returned was Caribbean Mystery and Caribbean Mystery Part 2, each available for rental at a price of $1.99. These turned out to be an Agatha Christie tale produced by the BBC starring Joan Hickson as Miss Marple, who becomes involved with a murder while on vacation at a resort hotel on Barbados. It aired in 1989, so it's quaint even by BBC standards, and I've had fun it's sort of a surprisingly grisly little mystery that unfolds under the palm trees with the sounds of the forest, so I hope our stay in St. John's is going to be a lot less eventful than that. Finally, in content, I would be remiss if I didn't remind you that you can follow along with the Odyssey by subscribing to Eric Loss's blog, which you'll find at svodyssey.blogspot.com. I just checked, and as of Thursday night, January 26th, I don't see an entry indicating that he has departed, so he may still be waiting for some work with customs to be on his way around the world. I'll add one more item of content that backs up the Daily Deal. I saw that the Daily Deal of the other day was Alone, the Classic Polar Adventure by Richard E. Byrd, and it's an account of his time at the South Pole. So I thought, given all the time that Eric is going to be alone, that that'd be a nice gift for him, and it was $1.99, so I was able to send it to him and know that it was going to get from my computer in Denver to his Kindle in Chile and be part of his library for the trip, and he did receive it, and he said he thought it would be interesting to read. I see now that the Daily Deal is over, that Kindle book is going for $14.75. So to grab it for $1.99 and be able to gift it to Eric was a lot of fun. Time now for your comments. Jim Jones from Omaha was the first one to send me a link about an innovative ebook display technology for tablets. It mimics many of the moves we use to make with our fingers in a traditional book, including riffling through images of pages to move forward and back in a book and turning several pages at a time. The patented prototype was developed by the KAIST Institute of Information Technology Convergence, and I'll have a link to the video of it in the show notes. Jim wrote, I originally saw it on the Digital Reader site. A commenter there seemed to poo-poo the idea as unimaginative recreation of the paper book reading experience, but I think perhaps this person, along with many others with similar views, don't really grasp how important this kind of interface is for classroom usage, at least as currently constructed. I agree with Jim that this kind of enhancement of ebook navigation really does have particular benefits in schools, where moving around in a book during a discussion, it can be a little bit cumbersome with the existing Kindle tools. Joe in Scranton, Pennsylvania, a city that I've visited on cross-country drives from here to Boston, emailed in response to a question posed by a listener about a problem with a Kindle Fire. Yes, I have also experienced the mysterious phenomenon of books disappearing from the cloud tab in the Kindle Fire. Joe explains, I have purchased many books on my Fire as well as previous Kindles. A couple of weeks ago, I had the urge to look something up in one of my old books. I went to the Cloud tab in the Fire under Books in order to find and re-download the book, and was so surprised to see it wasn't there. In fact, only 30 or 40 of my previously purchased Kindle books were listed there in the Cloud tab, as opposed to the hundreds that used to be listed there. I tried rebooting the unit and restoring factory settings, but was unable to get the books to reappear. Now, he went to his computer, logged onto his Amazon account, browsed through the digital library, manually performed a send to Kindle Fire on the book, and so he got the book that way. He writes, this is certainly an inconvenience, but it's not the end of the world. I haven't contacted Amazon support yet, since the Fire is working like a dream in all other respects. Now, I just checked on my own Fire, and I found 328 books listed in the Cloud tab. I had to count them manually, which is kind of a pain, and that's quite a bit fewer than the 513 archived items that appear on my archive on the Kindle Touch. And at Manage Your Kindle, I see 354 listed. And when I switch to all items, I see 554. So there's some odd discrepancies going on here. When I called Kindle support, I didn't get a very conclusive answer saying that some files aren't compatible with the Fire and the Kindle. Now, separately, Sally Collinvoe emailed on this same topic, and she had a fix that she found in the forums. And what you do is you go to set, this is on your Fire, go to Settings, and then More, and then Applications. Switch from Running Applications to All Applications. Go to the Kindle, the Amazon Kindle, and clear data and maybe the cache. Then it seemed to clear the issue. Jackie Burnham also had trouble with this. She left something in the show notes. So there's clearly something going on here, and I don't know that I really understand it, because it seems to me that anything that can be read on a Kindle ought to be able to be read on the Fire. So if you've got some ideas on what's going on here and how to handle it, send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. That's it for this week. Because of our stay in St. John, I won't be able to host a Google Plus TKC video hangout until the week of February 12th, when Darlene and I will be back in Cambridge. I'll have the details in TKC 184 on Friday, February 10th. I've already finished and preloaded next week's show, TKC 183, for automatic upload at the usual time on Friday, February 3rd. It gave me a chance to catch up with a full show's worth of comments that have been gathering up in Evernote, with lots of observations about the Fire and the Touch and other topics. For TKC 184, I plan to make a special recording from Maho Bay, St. John, with observations about our Kindle adventures in paradise, with perhaps some Kindle user on the beach interviews if I spot some of the other guests reading on Kindles. To take you out, I'm going to play a little bit by a musician who lives on St. John when he's not touring, and it's one of my favorite songs because of the Boston connection. If you'd like to know who the artist is, just send me an email and I'll be glad to tell you.
She wears a Red Sox cap to hide her baby dreads. The girl she was in New England is different now and then. And all the local bars, she flirts and tells the boys while they're talking. She from Boston. came to this island from Boston.